When I grow up, I'd like to be an architect or an interior design person.
Well, I'm thinking about an astronaut, but I don't really know.
I want to be a surgeon.
Fire engine.
I want to be a scientist and a movie star.
Fighter pilot.
I want to be a teacher.
When I grow up, I want to be a NBA star.
Probably a career in broadcasting.
And then after I retire from the NBA, I want to be an eye doctor.
Oh, decisions. Let's see, I'm not going to tell you how old I am, and I still haven't figured out what I want to be yet when I grow up. This is Focus on the Family, and today we're going to look at some common mistakes made when looking for a job and how to avoid them so you can find the career just right for you. Our host is psychologist and author, Dr. James Dobson, and I'm Steve Kelly, filling in for Mike Trout, who'll be back in the seat real soon after his bike trip across America. But before he left on his cross-country excursion, Mike was able to join Dr. Dobson in the studio with two guests who are committed to helping people find suitable careers. Without further ado, here's how Dr. Dobson and Mike began the conversation.
Mike, how long has it been since you've had to apply for a job and go through that process?
Well, it was 16 years ago. A little office in Arcadia, California. I came with my resume in hand seeking a job at Focus on the Family.
Is there any more degrading experience in life than sitting around an HR department, an employment office, and hoping for a handout? You got your hat in your hand, and don't call back for 2 weeks, and you wait, and then the offer isn't what you thought it was. That can be a pretty painful experience.
It really can. Your ego is involved. Your self-concept is on the line. They don't understand who you are, and can't they see how good I would be in this position? It can be a very difficult experience. How long has it been since you went through that?
Goes back to 19...
You don't have to give the year.
1960, as a matter of fact, when as part of my graduate training at the University of Southern California, I had to teach 2 years. Mm. All child development majors have to do that, which is a wonderful experience. You're just with kids, you know, every day, and it was the most valuable part of my training. But I didn't have a teacher's credential, and therefore schools were not terribly enthusiastic about hiring me because I hadn't trained to be a teacher.
Right.
And Shirley had, and she just graduated from college. She did have a teaching credential, and in those days they needed teachers. So we went into the employment offices of various districts as a team. We said, you want her, you get me.
Two for one.
We're going to be a two-for-oner. Yeah. And so one district, the Hudson School District in Southern California, hired us both. Turned out to be one of the most exciting and rewarding things I've ever done. Yeah. I absolutely loved those kids and loved teaching, and would have been happy doing it for many, many more years.
Anyone who has read your books or listened to this broadcast knows that you love teaching and have written about some of those students especially.
So it was worth the effort, but finding a job is one thing and choosing a career is another.
That's right.
We're going to talk today about choosing careers and changing careers what the implications are and how to make the right choices. And we have a couple of experts on that subject that we're delighted to have with us today. Larry Burkett is back in the studio with us for about the 2,000th time since 1979 when you first came, Larry. You're looking so good. I'm just delighted to see how good you look.
Thank you, Jim. I feel great.
You had a bout with cancer 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Two years and 4 months ago now.
Yeah, and you're doing very well.
Every test comes out negative so far, and I feel great. I mean, I feel as good as I ever have and probably feel better than I did 4 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, certainly.
Larry Burkett, of course, is founder and president of Christian Financial Concepts, has his own daily radio broadcasts that are carried on 1,100 outlets throughout the world. I remember when you started that program.
Started it as a result of being here, as a matter of fact. Stations, after I did the first program in 79, and they began to air, I began to get calls from stations saying, what else do you have that we could hear? And I said, hey, what you hear is what you get. That's all I know about radio. But that's really what started the program.
I guess no greater thrill than using this ministry to advance others. And, in fact, I think that's why we're here.
Amen.
You know, who knows why God has chosen to do this? I don't think it has very much to do with you and me, Mike, and the other people here. As much as I appreciate the talent that he's brought here, Yeah, he's got his own purposes, and I think one of them is to use the visibility of Focus on the Family to give exposure to promise keepers and
Moms in Touch.
Moms in Touch and so many others, and Gary Bauer's group in Washington and so on. Larry has written over 50 books, has 4 grown children, 9 grandchildren. He's a very blessed man. Also with us today is Lee Ellis. Lee started at Christian Financial Concepts in 1990 to begin the Career Pathways Vocational Assessment Program. He received his B.A. in History and a Master's in Counseling and Human Development from Troy State University in Alabama. He speaks at conferences on career planning. He and Larry have co-authored the book that we're going to talk today. In fact, 2 of them, maybe 3 of them, Your Career in Changing Times, Finding the Career That Fits You, and Guide to College Major and Career Choices. Lee and his wife Mary have 4 children, 2 grandchildren, and is a retired colonel in the Air Force. Lee, it's good to have you here for the first time.
Thank you, Dr. Dobson. It's great to be with you.
We were just getting acquainted up in my office, Mike, and Lee was a pilot, a fighter pilot, in the Vietnam War, was shot down over Hanoi.
That's right.
Spent 5 years in the Hanoi Hilton, or one of those prisons there. Which one?
Well, I was in the Hilton for 10 months, and then out in Son Tay, about 10 miles out of town for a couple of years, and then back to one called the Plantation, and also I spent about a year up on the Chinese border when the Linebacker 2 bombing operation started in 1972. They took half of the prisoners and put us up there as an insurance policy in case Hanoi was destroyed. They would still have some pilots tucked away.
Were those prisons, and was that experience as bad as we hear?
Well, there were days when it was as bad as you hear on
you
the worst
You were tortured,
day.
Weren't you?
I was tortured, and 95% of the guys who were prisoners with me were tortured at one time or another, but I wasn't tortured every day. Most of the time up there, it was more of live and let live, but you were living under a communist regime, a totalitarian regime, that always had the option of coming in and dragging you out into some faraway place.
That experience drew you closer to the Lord, didn't
it? No question about it. It really did. I guess the one way I can sum it up is today, driving down the interstate in our nice cars, we can feel in control. But when you depend on your enemy for your food and shelter and for your very life to not kill you, you realize that you don't have very much control, and in fact, it is only the Lord's providence and blessing that enables you to continue day after day.
I tell you, we owe a debt of gratitude to those of you who served your country and suffered in that way, although it was a long time before the nation seemed to realize that, wasn't it?
Yes, sir.
Well, we've got things to talk about
today.
We're going to talk about careers. We ought to also mention, if our listeners have heard some background laughter and noise and breathing and coughing today, we have 40 students surrounding us here in the studio who are here, of course, with us this semester for the Institute for Family Studies. And it's a delight to have you all with us in the studio. We're going to open the microphones either today or tomorrow and give you an opportunity to ask some questions, because this subject will be relevant to all of you, and certainly to some of you who have not yet decided what you're going to do with your lives. And so we're just glad to have you here. Larry, we started out by talking about how tough it was to have to look for a job.
Mm-hmm.
How long has it been since you sought employment?
Boy, it's hard to remember. I think maybe when I came out of the Air Force in 1962, I was looking for a job, went to work at the Space Center, worked there 10 years while I was in college and getting my graduate degree as well. I think that was the last time I really had to interview for a job. From that point on, I kind of worked for myself. I was too ornery to work for anybody else, so decided to go to work for myself. But I can remember the first time I ever got fired, and that was a really debilitating experience.
That does tend to stay with you.
Exactly right. But, you know, it's funny, Jim. I studied engineering. I was a horrible engineer. I didn't want to be an engineer. My father was an electrician, so I became an electrician. Went in the service, and because I'd been an electrician, they put me in electronics, which I hated. Came out of the service looking for a job while I was going to school, and they offered me a job at the Space Center because of my electronics background. I hated that. Then I was around real engineers, and I knew I wasn't ever going to be one. But I had to study engineering in college for GE to pay for my education. So I took one course in engineering, one course in business, one course in engineering, one course in business. And then when I got done, I promptly dumped the engineering, because I knew I was never going to be an engineer, mm-hmm. and went into business.
At least you knew your own interests and skills mm-hmm. well enough to make the right decision. How common is it for people to just flat out make the wrong choice?
Oh, real common. I mean, I don't know what Lee probably knows the percentages, but I'll bet 80% of Americans, 80% of college graduate Americans, don't know really what their career should be. They're just floundering around.
You agree, Lee?
When I was at the University of Georgia there, I'd get on the bus to go from North Campus to South Campus, and so many students would see my uniform and start asking me about the Air Force, and these were seniors. And I'd say, well, what are you going to do when you graduate? Oh, I don't know. I don't know. And they really didn't have any career plans at all. They had gone to college because that was the thing to do, but they really didn't have, in most cases, a focus.
You know, I don't blame them, because it's tough to choose a career that's consistent with what you are now and what you will be, what your interests are, what your skills are, where you can earn a living, mm-hmm. where you will be satisfied, you know, where there's a job available. That's a tough assignment when you're 21 years old.
You know, I'm a real believer, Jim, that God wired each one of us up to do one thing in the world better than anybody else. I truly do believe that. All you have to do is be able to find what that one thing is. The difficulty is most people don't know how to find out what that one thing is. And we're so, particularly at a young person's age, you're so susceptible to outside influences. Either your parents saying, well, I want you to do this, or you go to a career counselor at the college who said, well, this is where the jobs are. And so you study that. But you may never be good at that.
One of the things that I've seen is that parents can be the greatest help or the greatest hindrance. And so many people end up in a job because their parents manipulate them into that career field through their college studies. Parents want their children to succeed, and in our society, even in Christian homes, success usually means making a lot of money. So they will steer their children towards the moneyed occupations.
I think I saw in your writing someplace you told about a man who would not pay for his son's
yes,
education
sir.
If he didn't go into a particular field.
That is very common for even Christian parents to say, well, you must study science or medicine or law or something that's going to pay well, or elsewise it's not a good return on our investment because college is very expensive. Totally neglecting that God has wired this individual up with a very unique set of talents and motivations to use in his kingdom.
Hmm. How in the world does a student like those sitting here today project himself or herself 30 years into the future and know what the profession or the position is going to be like at that time and know whether in the wide world they're going to want to be doing that? I've given this illustration before, but I think I read it in Dr. Conway's book having to do with a dentist who said, how dare that 18-year-old I used to be locked me into dentistry today because mm-hmm. I don't like dentistry. You know, it's a tough assignment.
Well, we had one of our clients who went through our assessment who was a dentist, and he was getting out of dentistry, and he had been in it for 15 years. And he said, I went into dentistry because when I was a teenager, we went to the dentist's office, and the dentist had leather chairs, nice pictures on the wall, and mm-hmm. he drove a sports car, and those were the things that I thought I wanted in my life. And he says, but I hate being a dentist because people don't like to come to see me, and I like people, and I want them to like me, and I don't want to hurt them. And he says, I'm leaving dentistry.
Is there a way, Larry, to go about that choice in a more scientific way?
Well, yeah, I think there is, Jim, in all honesty. Let me back up a little bit and tell you how the whole process started. For many years, probably since 1975 is when I was first introduced to what was called the DISC test, the personality profile. And I took one myself and I said, wow, this thing knows exactly who I am. I'm going to use this. So I used it in counseling for that point on because I wanted to know, I was counseling couples now having financial problems, and I needed to know who the decision maker was. And often it would seem to be the husband when, in fact, the wife was the decision maker. And if you want to correct the financial situation, you best
deal with her.
deal with the decision maker. And so I said, well, I had counseled long enough that I was beginning to counsel the children of people that I had counseled. And I saw them making exactly the same mistakes, financially, but also vocationally. They were in careers they didn't like. They were the last people hired, the first people fired. And that consequently, they had a lot of financial problems as well. And I began to think, surely there is a way to determine, just like you can determine personality to a large degree, there's a way to determine vocational aptitude and interest and skills. And granted, you can't tell what kind of a job will be there 30 years from now. So the thing you want to do is do what you do the best, no matter what it is, because you're always going to be employable. The people who are good at what they do, no matter what the career field is, are going to be employable people, and because everybody wants them.
Now, if you want to take a battery of tests that help you answer some of these questions, you can spend $2,000 to $3,000 mm-hmm. in 2 or 3 weeks doing it. Is there a shortcut to that?
Well, let me tell you what I did. Yeah, in fact, I was real familiar with those tests, and I said, listen, when I met Lee, I took a hint from Bill Bright at Campus Crusade. Bill Bright never met a human being that he didn't think ought to work for Campus Crusade, right? That's true. That's how
very
he got.
Well
that's
said.
Really. That's how he got me there. I met Bill Bright at a conference. He said, God told me you ought to be on staff with Crusade. Well, I was a young Christian. He was an older Christian. I thought, well, he surely knows God's will. I didn't know he told everybody that he ever met that. So when I met Lee.
He was right about that most of the time.
Lee had the aptitude that we needed. He had the education that we needed. And I said, Lee, God told me you ought to be on staff with Christian Financial Concepts and help us develop a test to help these young people find the right career. What I want is I want you to take the current tests that are out there that would take you 6-7 hours maybe to take minimum. At a cost of a couple of $1,000s, all I want you to do is boil them down to an hour at a cost of $25, so we can deliver it to anybody. He hadn't quite made it yet, but he's got it down
to
2 hours.
You're working on it, aren't you?
Right. We've been working on that for several years. We used a lot of off-the-shelf assessments for several years until we could, through research and development, actually validate our own. And we're down to 2 hours and a lot less than the $2,000 that we were talking about. So.
And Lee did the right thing. We hired the University of Georgia Psychometrics Department to come in behind and validate this test all the way along the way so you're sure it meets all the academic standards. But in truth, there is a way to do it because everybody has a vocational aptitude geared that way by God, an interest and an aptitude and an ability. All you have to do is help them find that. Now, sometimes you can't tell the exact job by any means or even the exact career. But one thing you can do, which is more important, is eliminate the things they'll never be good at. That's particularly important.
You know, all of this conversation has caused me to think a thought I've never had before. When I asked Christ into my heart, I was in high school. I was at that critical time that you talk about in Life on the Edge, when I was making career decisions, and I was asking what the Lord's will was for my life. And what I felt comfortable doing played a very key role in that whole process. And I loved radio. I'd loved radio since I was a small child, when I'd sit late at night and tune across the dial and log radio stations from around the country. And I enjoyed singing, so there was a relationship between singing and talking. And that process that I went through as a new Christian at a critical moment was in many ways similar to what you're talking about now, where you ask that basic question, what do you enjoy doing? Mm-hmm. What do you do well? And I was right at the moment when the answer to that took me down the path that eventually led to radio.
One of the things that gets in the way of people actually being able to do that is that they're so busy comparing themselves to someone else. Mm. And I would say to the young people in the audience and to the parents in the audience is, accept the fact that God has designed each one of us uniquely. Psalm 139, 13, and 14 talks about us being woven together in the mother's womb. And I picture a tapestry, and your tapestry is different from mine. But if we can say, what is the unique way that God has wired me up, and then follow that? That will be the blessing.
What's the most typical mistake made by young people the ages of those around us here?
I think the most typical mistake is not making any plans at all, not even addressing the issue. That's the biggest problem we have, is that the parents are starting to take a look at it, but the young person is more focused on the social aspects, and let's face it, young people are social. It's part of life, is to be social. But to not think seriously about what am I going to do with my life, how am I going to dedicate it to the Lord, and how am I going to use the talents that He's given to me?
You know, I described that kind of situation in my book, Life on the Edge, and I gave the analogy to a rocket sitting on a launch pad, and the engines are blowing like crazy, and there's smoke, but it's not lifting.
Right.
It's not going anywhere. And young people sometimes come home after being gone for 2 or 3 years. Maybe they've been at college. Come back and sit around wondering what to do next, waiting for a dish to rattle in the kitchen, you know, and frustrate their parents like crazy. They have no clue, no idea of what's next. And sometimes that rocket blows up and goes all over the landscape. You all have seen that, haven't you?
It gets very discouraging, I think, for somebody, whether a college graduate or not. But let's take the worst-case scenario, and that's somebody who's gone all the way through college, paid all the costs, paid the price to get an education, comes out, goes into that field, and just hates to go to work every day. And as a consequence, they aren't good employees, and they aren't desired by the employer. So when a layoff comes along, they get laid off. And it begins to build discouragement upon discouragement, but they feel like they're trapped because that's what, you know, they put all the money in, put all the time in, they're trapped into whatever that career field is.
Let me describe another problem related to this, and I'll bet you all have seen it. And furthermore, I bet the people who are listening to us right now know somebody who's like this. There is a syndrome that is characterized by a gambling mentality. There are men and women, men especially, who can't allow themselves to find a career and take a job, earn a paycheck, and progress slowly. They put it all on the roll of the dice. I don't really mean gambling. I mean they are always going for the big deal. Mm-hmm. You talk to them and it's right around the corner. The ship's mm-hmm. coming in. I mean, I've got this business thing going. You cannot believe what's going to happen. And it never quite does. And they go year after year after year looking for the big deal. They get in a deeper hole. Financially, they frustrate their wives like crazy because they're always looking for the big deal. If they lived 120 years ago, they would have been on their way to the West Coast in the gold rush, you know, the 49ers or what have you. They're prospectors. They're the people who simply can't hold down a job because they're looking for something bigger. Mm-hmm. And as a result, they waste their lives. Have you seen that?
Yeah, no doubt about that. That goes beyond even vocational interest, I think, into character. Because that's a whole different side of the personality. You must develop character. And character means that you do things even though you may not enjoy doing them. We've all done that. I mean, many of us have had things that we had to do that we didn't particularly like. We stuck to it because we knew it was the right thing to do. Some people just can't do that. In our society, we're raising a lot more of those today who can't stick to one thing.
Other than deepening my relationship with the Lord, the most important thing I learned in my 5.5 years as a POW was the value of doing something one day at a time. I'm committed to learn to speak Spanish as a POW. No books, just from learning from my roommates. And I studied my vocabulary words every day, and I spoke Spanish 20 minutes a day, 5 days a week, for 2.5 years. The unfortunate thing was I achieved my goal before I was released.
You had to find a new goal, right?
Right. So then it was German. Well, I committed to having a working vocabulary in German, and unfortunately I achieved that one before I was released. But what I learned out of that, I hated languages, the study of languages, because it was so disciplined and every day you had to learn vocabulary words. But as I made that commitment and I did it one day at a time, I did my duty, so to speak, one day at a time, I achieved the goal, and it's been a real blessing to me. So the issue, I think, is the making the commitment and working the process. Process, process, process brings results.
Jim, I have a good friend who's a surgeon who hates medicine. And I met him as a result of that because he'd been into every get-rich-quick scheme that ever came by. And he was losing. He made lots of money now. This guy probably 15, 20 years ago made $200,000 a year and spent every dime, I mean wasted every dime, get into a lot of get-rich-quick. And out of desperation, his wife dragged him in to see me. And sitting and talking to him, I realized what his problem was. He did not want to be a doctor. His get-rich-quick things were to try to make enough money that he would not have to practice medicine any longer. He was in the wrong career field.
And did he ever make it?
Yeah, in fact, he left that career field. He's now a builder. He does not practice medicine anymore. Went into construction. That's what he wanted to do. Another friend who was a banker did the same thing. The guy didn't want to be a banker, and my friend did not want to be a doctor. His father was a doctor, and that's why he became a doctor. He was not. He was good at it. I mean, he did his job okay, but he did not enjoy going to work every day.
Well, we need to talk not only about the career choice for young people, but changing careers and what you've just introduced here. There are an awful lot of people out there that are like that. They don't like what they do, and they have no idea how to disengage without going broke in the process. And, Mike, we're out of time. So we have these students here that we want to ask some questions, and so let's just continue today, and we will air the tape that occurs tomorrow. It's good to have you all here. We're just getting started. My, there's so much in this book. The two books, in fact, Your Career in Changing Times by Lee Ellis and Larry Burkett, and Finding the Career That Fits You, the companion workbook to the book that I just mentioned. And those are available through Focus on the Family. We have just a second or two left. You have, I understand, helped more than 10,000 people through the mail answer those questions. Is that
actually
right?
Actually, 10,000 when the book was written, more than 40,000 now.
40,000 people. And so some of those who are listening to us out there can find that kind of help through your organization.
That's correct.
Well, Mike, you can tell them a little more about that, and we'll talk a little more about it next time. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
Well, that brings today's conversation to a close. If you found this material helpful, tune in again next time, and tell a friend who may be job hunting to listen in as well. Today's program was provided by Focus on the Family. Today's producer was Kelly Crowther, and special thanks to Ron Van Tongeren, engineering and production handled by Roger Ressler and John Doerr. Our executive producer, Bobby Valentine. Our host has been psychologist and author, Dr. James Dobson. And I'm Steve Kelly, filling in for Mike Trout, inviting you back next time when, once again, we'll turn our hearts toward home.